Gordon to the left, Little and Best to the right. In the backfield, Bobby Rainey. Here's Hoyer out of the shotgun. Plenty of time, going long. Gordon's wide open. Caught it, 10, 5, touchdown. Welcome back, Josh Gordon.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hoyer's got it. Right corner of the end zone. Jordan Cameron's got it. Touchdown.
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
Yeah, it's a football Wednesday and a very exciting day here in Berea. Exciting day in Cleveland, by the way. Go Tribe. That was nice.
How about that?
You know, geez, Jason Giambi, it makes a statement for all the old farts in this world.
It was a roller coaster of emotions, Vic. A roller coaster. It looked like they had it, and then Perez comes in and has one of those Perez games where he gives up two home runs, and then you're like, is this the gut punch like we saw against Detroit so many weeks ago? Nice. And then Giambi, the old man. I grew up, you know, I was in the Bay Area.
Of course.
Former Oakland Athletic. Steps up there, goes yard, and it was Jubilation City down there at Progressive Field, and it was awesome. That was as clutch a hit as we've seen in a while. It was needed.
That was an October type of hit in September.
And
very nice, and let's hope this continues to roll on for the Tribe and that they do get into the postseason. But we are going to talk Browns today in the news here in Berea. The biggest news, Brian Hoyer being officially named starter for Sunday's game against the Bengals. We're not surprised by that.
No surprise.
That was the full expectation. And adding to that, you can't not mention Brandon Whedon and his health, which is that he's not ready to play or practice, according to Rob Jedzinski. So was it a moot point? I mean, I think some of it comes into that discussion. I think most of it is Brian Hoyer played really well against Minnesota. The hand he has is hot, and you go with the hot hand.
That's right. It's smoking. And I love the fact that, you know, Rob Jedzinski started his press conference saying, how about the Tribe, and then went right into the quarterback, and that Brian Hoyer is going to be his guy again. And this is a tough test for Brian Hoyer. And if Brian Hoyer can come out and play well against this Cincinnati Bengals pass defense that has given fits to Aaron Rodgers as recently as last week, Ben Roethlisberger the week before that. Jay Cutler actually had a decent game against them, but that was on the road. And this is also on the road for him. But if they can have, you know, if Brian Hoyer can come out and have a solid game here, I think there is very little doubt in my mind that he will start once again in week 5 against the Buffalo Bills.
I think it's his job to lose now. And the head coach didn't say that. The head coach wants to keep that door open enough with the quarterback position that it's competitive, that it's close, et cetera, et cetera. Brian Hoyer did enough bad things while doing some really good things against Minnesota to create that doubt for sure. Those interceptions were all on him. When you really look at the tape and study it, those were all throws he would want back. And he made a couple of other bad decisions along the way. Mostly, though, he played well. The rhythm, the pacing, the speed with which he got rid of the ball. All those things that we talked about that were advertised about him came true. And he delivered, so he earns the second shot. But this second shot is against a Cincinnati defense that is far better than what I think he saw last week, than what the Browns have faced. Maybe let's put the Ravens in the category of having a really good defense and a really good pass rush. They affirm that against Houston. But if you had to put front sevens side by side, and I really like the Browns front seven, it's hard for me, though, to possibly – I may say Cincinnati's. If I had to trade front sevens, I might take Cincinnati's. I think it's really good.
Cincinnati's is excellent as well. And, you know, adding to this, speaking of front sevens, Billy Winn, Jabal Sheard, Quentin Groves reportedly not practicing, according to Scott Petrak here on Twitter. So a little bit of a ding on our front seven. But, yeah, great front seven. And you look at what they've done to opposing quarterbacks this year, only 4 touchdowns allowed in 4 games, 4 interceptions in 3 games. I'm sorry, 3 games there. Nobody's thrown for more than 251 yards against this defense, so it has been very, very good. They played very, very well despite facing 37 attempts a game, so they're not giving up a lot of yards per attempt. It's a very good pass defense, and it's got a good front. They're good on the back end as well. They've got some good corners back there. It's a tough team to throw the football against, and this will be a great test for Brian Hoyer. It'll be a great test for the offensive line, which I thought took big strides in week number 3 against Minnesota. And if they can continue to progress in week 4, that's going to give, I think, everybody around here a lot more comfort about the ability of those guys up front to get the job done.
I think the line played better. I also think better quarterbacking better decision making made the line better. I don't think there's any doubt, and this factored into the thinking of the coaching staff, even if it won't be said publicly. Brian Hoyer's play elevated so many other parts of this team that there was another reason you had to stay with him, because he's making other people better, and that's what the really good quarterbacks do. I don't know if he's a really good quarterback based on one start for the Browns and two career starts, but that is what really good quarterbacks do.
I don't know if that physically he has what it takes to be a really good quarterback in this league for a long time, but I think mentally he does, and that shows with his ability to get the ball out quick, to make quick decisions. And, you know, you think about, you talked about the differences between him and Whedon. We've talked about the number, 2.4 seconds on average, him getting the ball out versus 3.1 for Brandon Whedon. That's 22.5%. That's nearly a quarter faster for Brian Hoyer. That makes a huge difference for the offensive line. You have to block 75% as long as you did with Brandon Whedon, and that's a massive advantage for the offensive line, and the stats reflect that in the game against Minnesota.
I wouldn't hate seeing something of a running game materialize in this game.
I wouldn't hate it either.
I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm going to presume that it'll start with the offensive line, which, again, has its hands full against a tremendous defensive front. I'm not counting on it. I think it could be an extremely long, difficult day. But I'll tell you this. The way this offense is structured, the way they're going to go about their business, the Browns are not going into this game with that as a priority. If you're even putting together a short list on how the Browns can see their own chances, the coaching staff and players, of beating the Bengals, a strong running game or any modicum of running game isn't on that list. What they're hopeful for is that the way the passing game unfolds and the attack and aggressive style of offense that they have will open things up and allow them to get a few plays here and there with the run, enough honoring of the run to set up play action, and then the hope of hope, the nirvana, is that the running game is running down clock with a lead at the end of the game. But when you put these teams side by side, and this is where you see where you are relative to your competition, the Bengals come in here with extremely explosive passing game, and they've got less of a question at quarterback in Andy Dalton, but not as much of an answer as other really good teams. But we know what they have. They know what they have in receivers with, again, A.J. Green, and then adding Tyler Eifert to an already strong, pretty strong crew of pass catchers. But then they've got Giovanni Bernard, and that kid has lent an element of explosiveness. He's really, if you had to say what would be perfect for this Browns offense, that guy would.
That was Deion Lewis.
Right. I was just going to say that.
That's exactly what Deion Lewis was supposed to be, and that's an element that, like we talked about, the safeties are going to be challenged by Jermaine Gresham and Tyler Eifert in this game. The linebackers are going to be challenged by those two tight ends, as well as the responsibility of getting Giovanni Bernard and getting him under control, because the difference right now between Giovanni Bernard and every other running back that will be on the field on Sunday, including Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis of the Bengals, our own Willis McGahee, Bobby Rainey, and Chris Obanaya, is that Giovanni Bernard can get through a little crease and go to the house any single time that he touches the ball. And that's that game-breaking element, that chunk play element that is lacking from the Browns' ground game right now. And it's a tough matchup with Cincinnati. Listen, look at the running backs that they've faced this year. Week number one, Matt Forte, who's playing right now as well as just about any running back in the NFL. 19 carries, 50 yards, 2.6 yards a pop. Then they shut down the Steelers. But there is a little bit of hope. We saw Jonathan Franklin, 13 carries, 103 yards, averaging 8 yards a carry against this Bengals team just last week. The difference, though, again, Jonathan Franklin, more that third down kind of back, that more electric type of a back. James Starks, who got the start before hurting his knee, was also under 4 yards per carry in that game. So you're right. That's what's lacking. What the Browns need to be able to do is grind out 4 yards a carry. If you can get to 4 yards a carry, you can at least get yourself in some third and shorts, second and manageable second and shorts, where you can actually incorporate the play-action game and have it be respected to the point where you can do some things through the air down the field.
I like that. And I think if that number represents what you're grinding out when the game is close, or when you're still in a running mode, great. I'd love it better, and I think it's more likely to get to that point, again, if you've got that edge in the latter stage of the game, and if you're able to run some clock. Bernie Kosar is going to be with us, by the way. Bottom of the hour, we're going to hear from the former Browns quarterback, the icon.
Bernie!
And he's a regular here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal. He'll be with us around 2:15 p.m., and we'll get some info from Nate, of course, watching some practice, talking with players in the locker room today, as the rest of us are as well. Gerard Cherry is going to join us as well, so we'll hit him around 2:30 or so. We got to hear from Gerard, making his regular visit on the team. John Hughes, defensive lineman for the Browns, sat down with Jameer Howerton today, so we'll hear from him, because I don't think you can get enough of the defensive front. We had a Taba Rubin on yesterday, and I always love to hear what Rube has to say. And John Hughes had such a nice game, such a strong performance, and really what's interesting about how this front seven has evolved, Nathan, is this, I think. So the new pieces, the best new piece to this team, I think, in the front seven, in my estimation, through nearly a quarter of a season, is Desmond Bryant. It starts with Desmond, right?
He's been a monster.
And as a monster, he's opening some things for other people. Okay. Paul Kruger, obviously another outstanding addition, and I think he's benefiting from Desmond, and he's contributing, adding to what's going on. And we know Barkevius Mingo, 2 sacks in 2 games, and doing other things just all over the place. Real athlete, really strong as well as quick, deceptive because he's not the biggest guy, but it's not holding him back. He's getting leverage. He's getting in good position. His game is gaining momentum because he's learning and expanding what he does by the hour almost. I mean, literally by the game for sure. And you see a difference between him from, you know, from that first game that he stepped on the field, Baltimore, just in the course of 2 games, how much of a difference it's been over 2 weeks for him. But I just want to get to this point. So we know what those new parts are and what they've brought to it. But the defensive line that was in place, the defensive linemen here, I think were better than what this administrative group expected in terms of what Phil Taylor has been about, because he's certainly done his part to help. And John Hughes and Billy Wynn, they're thriving. I think the general attitude, though, is you couldn't have gone into this season, and I think this is right. This would be the Joe Banner thinking. This would be the Michael Lombardi thinking. Couldn't have gone into this season with a team of Phil Taylor's and John Hughes's and Billy Wynn's. They're not going to make dynamic plays. They're not going to bust things up as consistently as Desmond Bryant, as Barkevius Mingo, as Paul Kruger. And Jabal Sheard is also part of what this administration inherited, but he's bringing it his own way. I think he had his best game last week, and unfortunately he's got that injury, and maybe the knee injury, maybe we won't see him out there against Cincinnati. But I think that's a fair point, that you couldn't stand pat. I heard a lot of people say, why are they putting so much attention to the front seven? It's in good shape. It wasn't in the kind of shape to produce what we've seen now for 3 weeks.
Well, and not only that, now you're moving guys that played very competently the year before a little bit down the depth chart. They're using a rotation, so they get to come in completely fresh against already worn down linemen, and I think it elevates their ability to play at a high level. And when you can have that kind of rotation and you can have that kind of depth, it puts so much more pressure on an opposing offensive line. I remember the year that the New York Giants won the Super Bowl, and they did it without a great back end on their defense. They did it because up front they had a rotation of guys. They were always fresh, and they came in and got a lot of sacks and got to the quarterback, and that's what you're seeing with the Browns right now. Last night, I don't know if you had an opportunity to see this, the football life on Derek Thomas last night, which was phenomenal.
Saw bits and pieces. I was doing some work, but saw bits and pieces. I DVR'd it, so.
It was absolutely phenomenal, and I
stopped myself from saying I taped it, by the way, because I get so much crap for that.
For saying that? You TiVo, whatever. You recorded it.
I recorded it. Use record. You can't say tape.
You can say tape.
No, not in 2013. People give
in
crap.
This room right now, I won't give you any crap. You can say
well,
because
you're
whatever.
A
I know
respectful,
what you're saying.
Great guy, but well, I'm talking about the wise asses
the
are in my family.
Are
in my family and my friends. Go ahead.
All right. So I was watching
people who
that.
Allegedly like me.
I was watching that, and one of the things they talked about, and let me preface this, I'm not in any way comparing Barkevius Mingo to Derek Thomas, one of the best players, pass rushers of all time. But one of the things they were talking about in that was his unbelievable body lean and his unbelievable body control. And when I was watching the tape back of this Minnesota game and the explosion off the line, there are some similarities there. There was the one sack where he got knocked down, got back up, and then made the play
right.
That looked a lot like one of the plays they showed as the highlights of Derek Thomas. He had the body lean around the corner where mm-hmm. he had so much leverage and speed to get there.
Yeah.
And it was just – it struck me as – I think if Barkevius Mingo can develop physically and continue on the path he's on, he has an opportunity to be one of the more special pass rushers in the NFL. And there are certain things that, and they talked about on the show, you can't teach that type of a lean. You can't teach that kind of a physical gift. It just is something that people have within them. And I think Barkevius Mingo physically and athletically has some of those very unique gifts.
216-578-0850, 216-578-0850 is how you get aboard with us by phone. You tweet us, of course, at Browns_daily or at my partner's address, at N-A-T-H-A-N-Z-E-G-U-R-A, or my Twitter handle, which is at V-I-C-C-A-R-U-C-C-I. Want to get into some of your calls? That's coming up. Bernie Kosar is coming up at the bottom of the hour. It is a football Wednesday. And we are breaking it down for you. Browns coming up against the Bengals on Sunday. Vic and Nathan, ESPN 850 WKNR.